It kind of does eliminate all of our need for bullshit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we find our bullshit along the way, anyway.
Sometimes it's the friends we make along the way, but yeah, I mean, it's sort of, I don't know, there's never really like a need for bullshit, but it's an enjoyable part of the record because we get to like catch up as friends and catch up with our podcast friends, you know, who can't talk back or anything, but yeah, it does eliminate the, well, needs, not the word I'm looking, I don't know, it eliminates the need, which is unfortunate, but you know, we both have lives to lead too. We both have those lives to lead that we will one day, after season 12 is over, begin talking about again.
Yeah, one day after season 12 is over. This was a bad idea. I don't know if I like doing the shorties because it puts so much more onto us that we need to do. But hey, we're committed to it now.
Yeah, I mean, I could always do them on Monday, you know, if you'd rather move back to that and, you know, then you can put them out the day after. But
maybe,
it's up to you.
Maybe. Let me get through this thing with my side gig that is making it that I have no memory, because we're recording 267, still haven't published 264, and
right.
I haven't published the shorty from last week, haven't done any of that shit, had a wrestling show Saturday, had a wrestling show Sunday, had a busy day yesterday where I couldn't do anything, had a busy day today where I can't do anything, and I still have video to edit from the show this morning. Fuck!
Well, you know, if you ever want to take a break, let me know. Because, you know, I'm always all about that, too. But
I mean, we've unintentionally been on a break for the last 2 weeks. We haven't published anything.
Right. All right. Well, maybe my guest episode of that other thing will drop, and that'll give some content to the the hug heads out there.
The hug heads. I don't think we've ever called them that.
No, I think you're right.
Is that what you called them on the podcast? On the guest podcast?
I just made it up.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
The hug heads.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're 6 years into this thing. We should probably have a name for our fan base.
We should name our fan base, exactly.
I think we at one point were calling them huggers.
That sounds right.
We were
probably on a WTF riff. What's up, huggers? Yeah, that sounds right.
What's up, mother huggers?
What's up, no huggers? Hug
what
buddies.
The, what the what the hug?
No hug nicks.
WTH, what the heck?
What the heck?
Oh, no.
The Queen, Mark Maron.
You know, my dad's initials are WTH, and he's got a hat that says WTH. He got it, and
that's
cool. What the heck?
And did he buy it because those were his initials, or he bought it because what the heck?
Well, my sister got it for him, and I think she got it because of his initials.
The double meaning. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
double meaning.
Yeah, I like the
and,
double meaning.
Well, he likes it because the double meaning. She got it because of his initials, though.
Oh, I see. Because I'd wear a hat that says WTH. I think that's funny. I wouldn't wear a hat that says WTF. Because that's like, you know, it's just not as funny as WTH. All right. Should we get going?
Yeah.
There's a little bit of bullshit for you. Welcome to No Hugging, No Learning.
It's a show about one thing, watching Curb Your Enthusiasm for the first time.
I'm Tim Murphy.
And I'm Ted Hollowell.
And today we will be talking about Season 10, Episode 3, Artificial Fruit. But before that, what's the deal with stuff from our last episode? Side sitting. We didn't have any homework, but I found this tidbit out that I meant to go back and check, but I've seen enough confirmation of it online that I believe it's real, because I saw it on IMDb, and when I Googled this episode, it comes up a lot. So I do want to go back and watch. But when Larry sits next to Alice at the restaurant at the end of the episode, side-sitting, an extra looks directly at the camera. Not only that, you can hear a crew member say, "That lady just looked at the camera off screen."
Holy shit, really?
I did not notice this. And evidently, it's unnoticeable enough that they just left it in. And so I really can't wait to go back and check that out. Like, yeah, that lady just looked at the camera. Who cares?
Jesus Christ.
Who cares? We're almost wrapped for the day. I like that the seemingly lackadaisical way that Larry goes through life and very lazy just extends to the production of the show. Not only does someone look at the camera, someone says that lady looks at the camera and they just leave it all in. So I like that. And that's it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know.
Any news or anything? I mean, that's the continuity. Any other news or anything?
I don't think so. I don't think I saw anything. Did you?
No, I don't think so. Anyway, trying to think. No, nothing's coming to mind. All right. If you have never listened to us before, we are not a research-heavy show, despite the last 6 minutes.
All right.
Being exclusively research and bullshit. I mean, a lot on top of that, but we'll get into that in a second. We like to have our questions pop up naturally in the run of the episode and assign them to ourselves the week following as though we are giving ourselves homework. I've never seen these episodes before. Tim has never seen these episodes before. If we miss anything, if we egregiously skip over anything, please send us an email or send us a tweet or a DM. It's nohuggingnolearningshow@gmail.com, @nohugging on Twitter, or @nohugging_nolearning on Instagram. Reach out through any of those methods. If you like us, you can give us a 5-star rating and a written review on Apple Podcasts. You can give us a 5-star rating on Spotify. It really helps the show, helps us grow, helps us break through this plateau. If you've already done one of those and you still like us for whatever reason, consider joining us over on Patreon. It's patreon.com/nohugging, where for $5 a month, you can get early access to extended versions of every episode, and you get mini reviews of season 12 episodes days after they air. How many days?
The week it airs. Sometime.
We can't even say that. I haven't put out episode 2 yet.
A month it airs.
Within a reasonable length of time after it airs. We'll leave it at that. You can actually get your first 7 days free over on Patreon, because maybe my, lack of commitment to putting things out isn't really swaying you to spend your hard-earned money. Check it out for free. 7 days. Patreon.com/nohugging. But Tim, that's not the only way they can support the podcast, right?
That's right. You can support our podcast by starting your own podcast. Just go to libsyn.com, LIBSYN, sign up, use the promo code HUGGING, get up to 2 months free, and it helps us out. And, even if you have a podcast right now and it's on some inferior website, move it to Libsyn and use the promo code HUGGING. And you can get up to 2 months free, and you get all the best stats, and they'll put your podcast, like at the end of a lot of podcasts where people say, oh, you can find it wherever you get podcasts, Libsyn will put it there.
It's in those places. It's in all of those places.
Wherever you get podcasts, they'll make sure your podcast is there. It's very handy. So Libsyn.com, LIBSYN, use the promo code HUGGING and get up to 2 months free.
And that is also down in the description. Want to give a shout out to everybody joining us on Patreon. We got Just Dan, Liam M., Michael Klatsky, Nate Collins, Tamara Ortiz, guys and gals over at the Idiotville Podcast, John Murphy, Danica Ligorio, J-Dog Conlord, Nick Kudla, Adam Webb, and Megan Stolarski. Thank you guys so much. All of that being said, Season 10, Episode 3, Artificial Fruit. Original air date, February 2nd, 2020. And if you are looking at TV Guide that night, you are going to see Larry gets the chance to clear the air with Alice and goes to extreme lengths for a lunch with Richard.
Not bad. It's not really for a lunch with Richard right off the bat. I just have to say that. So we'll see if we can make it better at the end. But I like the first part. I like the way they put that. So we'll see at the end if we need to make it better. We open as Larry parks in a kind of dingy back alley and walks to the backyard of, it turns out, Mr. Chulu Porter, who was the former pastry chef at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City and now lives in Los Angeles. You know, I guess he could have
apparently
made a transatlantic move in his retirement days. Why not?
Yeah, as all elderly people do, they move from one busiest city in the country to the next busiest city in the country.
Yeah. And when he worked at the Waldorf Astoria, I love the way he puts this. I was known for my scones. Oh my gosh. Just anything that rhymes. I'm a simple man. What can I say? And Larry wants to recruit him to make good scones for his spite store, because we know Mocha Joe does not have good scones. He has inferior scones. And so Larry wants the best scone he's ever had. And it was made by Mr. Porter. And somehow Chulu knows Mocha Joe and he hates him as well. And so he makes a batch of scones for Larry, who says they are pretty, pretty good. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. Was this the first time they referred to Larry's store as a spite store, or had we heard that before?
I think it may have been. I think this may have been the first time. I don't remember it happening before.
It kind of seemed like it. He might have said it. Larry might have said it kind of in passing, but this is the first time it really stuck out to me because I know that's a big, I don't know, almost catchphrase from Curb is Spite Store. It's like one of those things that you see. So there it is. Now we're finally in on the joke. Over at Larry's lawyer's office, Alice now is out for blood. Now that Larry did what he did by, like, you know, holding her captive at the table so he could side sit with her and show Ted Danson that he does side sit with people occasionally, all the time. Now, you know, Larry's legacy is in danger. Interesting that, you know, Mr. Swindell mentions the Hulu deal.
Yeah.
In this
which,
episode.
As of this airing, was still a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Seinfeld was on Hulu, and then it moved to Netflix, kind of in the middle of our run of doing that show for No Hugging, No Learning, interestingly enough. So, yeah, I thought that was kind of funny they mentioned that. And what she wants now is for Larry to donate a shocking amount to a charity called Survivors United for survivors of sexual assault and sexual harassment and make a speech at a Survivors United event. And Larry has heard of this organization before because Cousin Andy's wife, Cassie, is involved. And he goes over and grabs what his lawyer calls a decorative apple and starts eating it, even though it was real, and it's fine. He's like, hey, it makes him, the lawyer thinks that Larry's not taking this seriously because he's blithely eating an apple. And Larry's like, that's the only way you can eat an apple. And like the lawyer says, that's not true. My father had many angry apples in his life, I saw. I thought that was pretty quick. You know, I don't know if that was an improv or not, but it was pretty quick on his feet.
Yeah,
to bring up angry apple. Then Larry throws, he takes like two bites out of the apple and then throws the entire thing away in a, not a trash can, an unlined receptacle that Larry should have known was for paper.
God, and what becomes this whole sticking point in this episode was maddening. Because
it was really weird.
It ends being like understandable here. Every other instance that comes back into the trash can that shouldn't be used, it is not relatable. I've never seen that done. I've never been around people who do that, I guess.
Me neither. But, very forced. But, he made Richard Kind do a lot of heavy lifting later in this episode. A lot of heavy improv lifting, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trying to convince us that this was a normal thing. Because, in a lawyer's office, you might have a unlined paper recycling bin, you know, that's just for paper that you should know. And Larry, I can understand why he would mistake it for something he could throw food garbage in, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that it was for that in a lawyer's office. I did like Larry's line, boy, this is some place you got fruit that's not for eating, garbage that's not for garbage, and a bathroom no one can use.
That was good.
Great rule of threes use there. So over at Jeff's, by the way, it occurred to me right here, I was like, if only ChatGPT existed, Larry could have the perfect speech written immediately.
Oh my God, yeah.
I don't think he would have it. If I were in his situation, I'd have no problem writing using a ChatGPT speech. As much as we trash it for knowing Curb plot lines, I think it would write a pretty good speech, you know, to, you know, write a heartwarming speech that I could give to survivors of sexual assault. Return, you know? So over at Jeff's, Larry is amazed by the realistic fruit that she has displayed on her coffee table in the living room. And Larry also demands that Susie take down a picture of the two couples, Jeff and Susie and Larry and Cheryl, because he doesn't like looking at it. This was another hilarious line to me. It's like looking at a Confederate war monument.
Jesus Christ.
I thought it was an apt analogy. And then Susie comes back with what a lot of people do. This is part of our history. It's our history. We have to look at it. You know, we don't want to forget about this. It was a good time in our lives right then. Yeah. So the response was like just as funny to that as like looking at a Confederate war. It reminds him of a time in his life that he doesn't like looking back on. That to me, I think maybe the biggest laugh of this episode. And Susie will not take it down though. And she kicks him out. And Jeff, who wouldn't taste the scone on his way in, still won't eat the scone on Larry's way out. It's really the only thing Jeff has to do in this episode is tell him, I'm good. I'm good. I don't want to eat the, I'm good, which I liked as well. But you know, this brings up an interesting point. Like, I remember when I was dating and getting to, I would like shy away from being in pictures. I would almost be like, yeah, let me take the picture of you and your family. Cause you don't want me in this picture. Cause I know this isn't gonna, You know,
I
what
know
if
this
it doesn't
last? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it would, but maybe not. I know it's not going to, but like, what if it doesn't? You know, it's almost like, you know,
the
arguments against a prenup. It's like, oh, well, you're going into it saying this is going to end. It's like, no, just if it does, you should be safe. I shouldn't be in this picture of your family. You know, let's just not do that because then this picture's ruined.
Or at the very least, it's modern times. We've got modern technology. I'll go on the end. You can crop me out.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely try to be on the end. Yeah. But I always had that in the back of my head. Like, oh, hey, we're going to take a picture. Oh, okay. Let me get over here. Or not. Let me take it. I'll take it. No, we have a timer. All right. Let me stand over here. That way I won't ruin your family picture, my presence. Over at Cousin Andy's. He will try the scone because he likes a good scone, but it's so dry. Andy begins choking. He hates it. He does not like this scone. Cassie comes in and she thanks Larry for not only this massive donation. I think maybe she's had just like the biggest they've ever gotten. Larry says that he doesn't mention that it's part of a settlement for sexual harassment, which I think is funny. He's like,
well, yeah,
basking.
He says, yeah, I knew that you were involved with the charity. And she says, is that the reason? He says, that's part of the reason.
Yes. Yeah. And then he even says like, it's also a good cause. Like that's the other part of the reason. And then she asks him for another favor. Will you do a doodle for the auction? And he's like, hey, no, I don't really draw. And she's like, that's okay. It's just, you know, you have to just do a doodle and people are going to, it's got like a celebrity doodle auction. So he like kind of gets sucked into doing that as well. She's like, it just can be anything. And then he throws the rest of Cousin Andy's scone into, here it is. They call it a show can. Their real trash can is in the pantry. And this is just a trash can that they say is to let people know they do know how to throw things out, but they don't use it because it's not even, again, not lined.
Yeah,
and they don't say it's for recycling.
I'm sorry. Yeah, this is such a big thing in Larry David's life, apparently, that he needed to lampoon it on his highly successful sitcom, the usage
relatable.
Of show cans. All right.
Yes, the relatable everyday life occurrence of show cans. This may be some rich people stuff that we just don't know about. Maybe people do have display trash cans that they don't use, and the real trash can is hidden away in the pantry like Cousin Andy. But this is what I was talking about where I was like, he's lingering on this scene so long, they have to keep talking about why they have it, and it's not doing the premise any service. It's doing it a disservice because they're just digging themselves more into this unbelievable hole of having this fake trash can.
Tim, the real trash cans were the friends we made along the way.
Some of them were. So over at Richard Lewis's, he hates scones as well because they're always too dry. I gotta say, it sounds like Larry did make the perfect scone. Because whenever I've had scones, they are dry as hell. Like, that's the reason I don't really like them. And I know if I'm getting one, I know what to expect. Something dry as hell. Like, not moist at all. Just very crumbly. And so the reason everybody hates scones and the reason no one likes Larry David's scone makes it seem to me like it is a textbook scone, I gotta say. I think Larry's right.
It sounds like it is, like, the scone, yes.
Yeah, he nailed it. He nailed the scone. Sometimes I am in the mood for that, you know? Like, if I have a nice, you know, iced coffee or something that I know is going to give me that hydration to get through the scone, it can be very, it's so dense, you know, it can be very filling if you just have to grab one thing.
I've never felt inclined to eat a scone solo with no
no
liquid to wash it down. That is psychopath behavior.
It's a death sentence. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why are you doing this to yourself?
Yeah, you can't. It has to go with something. And the funny thing is, like, they're also not very dippable either. It's not something you can dip because they're
they immediately
bad shape.
Fall apart.
Yeah. And they'll immediately fall apart and they're so dense. Yeah, it wouldn't work anyway in the way that it would with like a cookie or something. So yeah you can't, it's an imperfect food for sure.
I would take a biscuit over a scone any day of the week, 7 days out of the week over a scone. Absolutely. Give me a biscuit.
Definitely.
Give me a cookie. Give me a muffin. Give me a cupcake. Give me
anything
a biscotti.
Else.
Give me a pre-packaged granola bar over a fucking fresh-made scone.
Yep. I got to agree. It sounds like Larry's found the perfect one. So the weird thing we get in this scene is Larry and Richard mentioned that, oh, you know who would like this? Marty Funkhauser. Too bad he's in China. What? You guys cannot... You can't. He's not coming back. What are you guys... You can't write him out like that.
What do they gain by this?
I don't know. I guess it would be weird if they never mentioned their very good friend again, but just at the beginning of the season go, shame Marty died. Well, what adventures are we getting into this year?
Yeah. Why can't they acknowledge a death? They do it every season. Someone dies, yeah. You know, not like on screen, but it seems like there's a funeral that they go to like pretty often, right?
Opening the season in Marty's funeral would have been a great send-off for
Bob
Einstein and the character.
You don't need to make it a season-long arc. You know,
you don't have to leave an open because he's not coming back. Like I said, you know,
exactly. He's not coming back.
We better not kill him off because what if he wakes up?
Make it funny too. Make it funny. Make him die in an embarrassing way, and everyone's obviously there to mourn, but they leave and they all just start snickering.
What if he went running with the bulls too? He went, to like avenge his nephew, and he died running with the bulls. Could be funny.
The next
That's just
year,
off the top of my head. Yeah,
that'd be very funny, actually.
Larry is wearing, you know, Cousin Andy actually complimented this sweater as well. Larry's wearing this very nice zip-up sweater, and he just gives it to Richard Lewis because he didn't want to look at it anymore because Cheryl gave it to him. He's really in his feelings about Cheryl in this episode, and we know it kind of like ended officially after their affair kind of spun its wheels for a little bit. It kind of ended officially last episode, but he's really stinging from things kind of, it seems like it's officially over with Cheryl forever. From the last episode, so he wants to get rid of the picture. He wants to get rid of the sweater, like anything that reminds him of her. He's really in his feelings about on this one. So he gives the sweater to Richard Lewis and says he doesn't want to see it again. And then asks if they're still meeting for lunch tomorrow at Theragotha. And Richard's line here, what do you do, bite your tongue? That cracked me up. I don't know why. but then they argue over the pronunciation. He's like, I forget what region Larry says of Spain that is from, but he's like, that's how they talk. They say their Z's as TH, which, you know, if you've ever heard someone say Ibiza correctly, you know that's true. So I like that. What did you bite your tongue? Why do you say it like that? No, that's why they say it. And then they argue over who is going to pay. Richard Lewis says he's picking it up. Larry says, no, you pick up every check every time we go out to lunch. So I'm getting this one. And it becomes like if I had an argument with a friend that reaches the level that this argument does, I wouldn't think there's a lunch tomorrow. It ends with a very stern fuck you from Larry to between both of them, I think, say it to each other. Like, good Lord. I mean, you know you've been friends for a long time if you can survive an argument like that. And it's about something amazingly nice, paying for an expensive lunch for the other person. I just love their friendship, you know, and I'm glad Richard Lewis is back in season 12. We get to see a little bit of him. Over at Theragotha, which was at 118 Entrada Drive in Santa Monica, but was not Saragossa. It was actually Tallulah's with a fake sign over it that says Saragossa's. I guess in service of the pronunciation joke, they needed to say something, you know, they needed a word like Theragotha to say. And so this was Tallulah's Mexican place, opened in 2017 and closed in 2023, unfortunately. Yeah. Larry is there a day early to drop his credit card off to pay for lunch tomorrow. And the host will not take it because that's too much responsibility. And Larry's like, well, where's Francisco? He'll take it. He waits on me all the time. He knows me. And the host says that his auntie has died and he's at the Visitacion for Concepcion. He says so many words that have this TH sound in it that I got to admit, I don't know if it's culturally insensitive, but I cracked up every time they did this. Because he's like, can you say that one more time? Visitacion or Concepcion? I'm like, oh my gosh. I thought it was hilarious. And the host even mentions that, again, you know, Larry can't go anywhere because everyone knows, like he said, your friend Ted was in here the other day with a very attractive blonde. And, you know, they even confirmed that her name was Cheryl. And so this puts Larry in even more of a rotten mood. And so over at the Visitacion, Larry cuts in front of the receiving line. And each time I loved him going, lo siento. Lo siento. Oh my gosh. And so he cuts in front of these actual family members and friends to get up to the front so he can talk to Del, the ruthless Navarro cartel lieutenant from Ozark. That's where I know this guy from.
Oh, okay.
This actor. Asai Morales is his name, I noticed in the credits. But the second I saw him, I was like, where have I seen this guy? And he plays a drug cartel member in Ozark, which I highly recommend if no one's ever seen it. But it's actually Francisco. And he, you know, Larry's there to ask him to take the credit card and to pay for lunch. As Richard Lewis shows up, giving the same Los Cientos to the entire line on his way up. And then Larry and Richard fight over who is going to give Francisco the, you know, their credit card. While he's mourning the aunt that essentially raised him as a mother, they end up diving underneath the open casket to grab a credit card that was dropped on the ground. Just, you know, just hilarious. So over at the Cinerama Dome, which was at 6360 Sunset, I remember this very well from every single opening to Entourage. Probably before the skip intro button was a thing when I was watching Entourage, now that I'm thinking of it, because you had to watch every single time.
Have to watch everything.
Yeah! Oh, yeah!
And the Cinerama Dome was featured very prominently as Vince and his buddies made their way. Vince and his entourage made their way up the Sunset Strip. It opened in 1963. I didn't know this. It's the only concrete geodesic dome in the world. I couldn't believe it. I was like, no one's built another geodesic dome out of concrete? That just seems crazy to me. But maybe it's just an ineffectual way to build your geodesic dome. I have no idea. It closed in 2000, was purchased by Arclight Cinemas, and they opened kind of a megaplex next door and kept the Cinerama Dome open. It was, I think they might have actually projected the movie on the dome itself, so it kind of had a curved feel to it. I don't know exactly how it worked, but you know, I remember hearing Doug Benson talk about the Arclight a lot, going to the Arclight because he's out there in LA and talking about it. And so I knew it was open for a long time after the Arclight bought it. It closed in 2020 due to COVID, never reopened. It closed permanently in 2021. There are plans apparently to reopen it and the 14 screen megaplex next door, but they've been pushed to like 2025 at this point, after you know, several delays going back to 2023. So may never see the Cinerama Dome open. I hope they don't destroy the only concrete geodesic dome in the world. But Larry and Jeff are there to see a movie, and Jeff tasted the scone. He said he didn't love it. Susie fucking hated it. Larry says that, you know, that they have no taste anyway. They don't know what they're talking about. Again, I would tend to agree. Jeff calls it, I think he calls it a fancy muffin. What's a scone? Just a fancy muffin. Then Larry sees a poster featuring Ted Danson as Robert E. Lee for a movie called Lee. And I don't know if Larry knew about this movie ahead of time, but it echoes the Confederate monument line he had earlier. Looking at a picture of Cheryl is like looking at a Confederate monument, and now her new boyfriend is starring as the most famous Confederate general. I thought that was an interesting bit of parallel thinking within the episode that we don't normally see in Curb. But Larry becomes so enraged, and Jeff's almost egging him on. He's like, get ready, he's gonna be on every talk show, these previews are gonna be everywhere, everyone's gonna be talking about this movie. And Larry becomes so enraged that he attacks the stand-up and injures Jeff in the process. He bites his tongue and he's bleeding everywhere. Back at home, only Leon had marketed milk and Mountain Dew. He could be like Arnold Palmer and have a drink named the Leon Black. And Larry, I love Larry, you know, immediately jumping on the premise like, you think milk and Mountain Dew would be as popular a drink as lemonade mixed with iced tea? But having said that, I used to mix milk and soda as a kid. I don't know what made me do it.
Ew. That's really gross.
It tastes like a float. I would mix Coke and milk. I would mix root beer and milk. And it gives you this creamy, because I love root beer floats. And that is like an easy root beer float for a kid to make. And so when I was, you know, young and we'd have like 2 liter bottles, I'd mix like half and half, basically milk. And I don't know what made me think of it, but damn, it's good. I wonder if it's still good to my adult palate. But, you know, if only I had Ted, people could be calling that the Tim Murphy. If I had told everybody about it, like, yeah, have root beer and milk. It's like a easy root beer float if you don't want to get the ice cream out and stuff. So, yeah, love it. So I'm down with but I don't know about milk and Mountain Dew. The citrus really turns me off. The citrus taste of Mountain Dew really turns me off of mixing it with milk. I would imagine it would, like, curdle or something. You know, I know if you mix dairy and, like, real citrus, it's a bad scene. So, yeah, like, if you've ever there's a drink, Ted, called the cement mixer. You probably never have it. It's alcoholic. It's a shot. Maybe you've heard of it. It's Bailey's and lemon juice. And they call it that because you know, someone pours it for you, you drink it, and it turns solid in your mouth, and it turns disgusting in your mouth too.
Yeah, that sounds fucking gross. Why would anyone enjoy this?
It's kind of a challenge, I think, and also maybe a prank in some cases. Like, oh yeah, we're doing shots, here's yours, and you give it to your friend, and then it's gross. It's just a bad idea. Just a shot glass full of wrong, as Jeff might say. But it reminded me of, that's essentially what Leon wants named after him. Larry counters the bad taste that white people have with pig knuckles, chitlins, every bad part of a pig. This felt a little racist to me. I don't know why when Leon was calling out all the like bad food that white people eat, why Larry can't talk about the unappealing things that black people eat, but I guess it's just like such a part of their culture. And also like the reason they used the entirety of the pig and made like, you know, and made pork cheek and pork belly and stuff like that, like cuts that, guess what, white people didn't want. They gave to the poor people who tended to be these marginalized communities of minorities. And that's why they were able to elevate, you know, and make food out of those things. I think that's why it felt a little racist to me. It's like, well, you guys eat all the disgusting parts of the pig. Yeah, why do you think, if I could take a line from the Home Depot guy, yeah, let's go back 400 years and figure out why that is. Why did we eat pig knuckles and chitlins? Let's figure that out. But no one's going to read that much, you know. We're going to get snowflake comments about this.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
You know, me bringing that up. But Larry's doing his doodle, and it's kind of like a number two that he kind of makes 3D, and he's like just kind of drawing weird lines in the shape of a number two. And it's I got to admit, even for a doodle, it's not that great, but it is fulfilling the assignment he was given, if you ask me. Leon takes a bite of the fruit that's on the kitchen counter, and it happens to be the super realistic artificial fruit that Larry bought from Susie's recommendation, and he chips his tooth. And I agree with Leon, decorative fruit doesn't belong in the kitchen, like the coffee table or
yeah
somewhere.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. No, if you put something in my kitchen that I can't eat that looks like food, I'm gonna be upset.
Very stupid. Yeah, very dumb of Larry to do that. So back over at Zaragoza, Larry has shown up for lunch, and what a great mission statement for Larry's very upset that he didn't get toast with his eggs. And Richard is like, you're like a politician. He's like, there'll be toast with every egg. And he's like, you know, like it's a demand. Like they always go together. And this is a great mission statement for Curb. Stop lecturing the world on your insane beliefs. I mean, he just encapsulated Larry David into one statement that I can't believe we had to wait till season 10 to get to, but I loved it. And Richard Lewis happens to be wearing the sweater that Larry gave him, even though he said the reason he was giving it to him was because he didn't want to see it anymore and be reminded of Cheryl. And so Larry gets up and tries to forcibly remove the jacket from Richard. But that's when a waiter comes back over with Larry's toast and with the check that Richard has paid and has left a very generous tip, as he always does. And Larry's like, oh, what happened to my credit card? I gave it to Francisco. Well, Francisco is absent again because he is still mourning his auntie. And so Richard got there first again with the check. Over at the Beverly Wilshire, a Four Seasons hotel, which was completed in 1928. Interesting bit of, you know, because he's been mentioned on Curb before, just an interesting bit of trivia here. It is where Sandy Koufax surprisingly announced his retirement at the age of 30 in 1966. And a crossover with the Seinfeld Cinematic Universe as well. It is the setting, but not the filming location for Pretty Woman. So it's set in this hotel, but it is not filmed there. And of course, Jason Alexander, star of Pretty Woman.
Yeah, the star, the person. He is the Pretty Woman.
This is a luxury hotel. It's going to run you $700 to $1,200 a night, depending on the night you want to stay, for like just a basic room.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know. And I noted in its Wikipedia article, another Entourage filming location. Evidently, they filmed a lot of episodes at this hotel.
Oh, yeah!
All right, we put a little sting in there every time Entourage is mentioned. Laverne Cox comes in where Larry is preparing to give his speech. This is where the Survivors United event is. And yeah, the Laverne Cox, the very famous already, you know, Laverne Cox greets Larry. And out of consideration for her having a cold, she does not, you know, shake his hand or hug him or anything like that. I found it pretty interesting that this was 1 month pre-lockdown. You know, we're about to lock down. This is like February 20th or yeah. February 2nd, I'm sorry. And we're about to lock down for COVID. And they're describing what a lot of people wouldn't do, which is be considerate of others and treat them the way they'd want to be treated. And a lot of people took that as like, well, I don't give a shit about COVID, so nobody does. Like, no, you have to treat them the you know, what the consideration is that you are taking their feelings about it into account. And so that's the consideration, not I don't give a shit about COVID, so I'm going to act like that in public. It's the way that Laverne and Larry were dealing with just a common cold. Again, just a common cold. Unless maybe Laverne Cox has COVID in this episode. Oh my gosh, maybe it was like early COVID.
Fuck.
Oh my gosh.
And they just didn't know?
Whoa.
I mean, I'm looking at the release dates of the rest of the episodes in the season, Tim. Episode 9 and episode 10 are post-lockdown.
I mean, I don't know when they filmed, but certainly within the canon of the show, you could say, wow, she probably had like an early COVID case. You know, this thing was going around. I'm sure there were several cases.
It was going around. You know, it was popping up. There's a reason it's called COVID-19, and that's for 2019.
Right. Right. So that's my headcanon now, is Laverne Cox had
COVID.
She's going to introduce Larry when he gives his speech. And Larry's like, yeah, why do you really talk me up? Like, say, here's a man who knows six languages. She's like, you know, you have six, you know, six languages. He's like, no, I barely know one. He's like, I know a little Yiddish. And she's like, you want to impress people. She's like, you want to impress people with lies? He's like, how else do you impress people? I thought that was another great encapsulation of Larry David that I kind of agree with. Like, you know, he's so self-hating that he imagines that everyone else, you know, I can kind of identify with this. It's like, I better make something up about myself that people like, because they're not going to like just me. You know, I think there's a little bit of that probably in everybody. You know, I don't know if there's a name for it, but like, you know, I better be somebody else besides myself, you know, if I'm going to impress people. And, you know, hopefully you get over that as you go through life, but or you find, you know, you find a way, you find something that lets you be yourself. You know, it's pretty relatable, but funny too. How else are you supposed to do it? Larry, of course, can't meet a trans person without mentioning that he knows, as he calls it, Ted, a transitioner. Somehow, maybe just as offensive as the other offensive things that people call trans people, a transitioner. I don't know.
A transitioner is
made it sound
definitely
like a car part.
It's definitely a thing to say. I don't know why you would choose that, but sure, Larry.
Yeah, it's like just on this side of like, if uninformed is one side and like deliberately offensive is on the other, it's like definitely leaning towards uninformed. You know, it's mm-hmm. like no one says transit. That's nothing anyone's ever said.
That's nothing anyone has ever said in regards to a human being.
And of course, he asked to. The most interesting thing to Larry is the penis in general, but especially when talking to a trans person, he has to really get into the penis talk and, you know, the questions about it. Could he be a penis donor? Could a white man? Could a white transitioner get a black penis? You know, those
words.
Kind of questions. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying, Ted. Earlier, I was, you know, earlier I was being a real snowflake, but now I'm just going to get canceled. We don't know where this kid stands.
Oh yeah, yeah. If we're not careful.
So Laverne, you know, excuses herself once she was like almost kind of maybe warming up to Larry at a certain point, but those just questions just turned her right off. And cousin Andy comes in wearing the sweater that Larry gave to Richard Lewis. He went out and bought his own, and Larry is, you know, incensed at that. And Cassie hates Larry's doodle, because she shows him another doodle, which is a beautiful watercolor, not a doodle.
Yeah, a beautiful painting that took time and effort and thought. All the things that she said Larry did not need to do.
Doodles are not mixed media either. You don't do pen and then, you know, or pencil and ink over and then, you know, paint on top of that. They are one medium. And that's like pen or a pencil, whatever you want to do. But yeah, this was absolutely unbelievable to me. She even like crumples Larry's doodle up and throws it out. She's not even going to put it up. But Larry, again, is completely right in this situation. And so in the reception hall, Larry goes in and he runs into Christine Lotti. I wrote famous question mark in parentheses next to her because damned if I know who this was. You didn't recognize her, I'm guessing, Ted.
I sure didn't.
I hate to be that presumptuous, but and that was her beautiful doodle that we saw earlier. And it sort of, I'm sure you caught this. The camera lands on a few of the celebrity doodles, like Rosie O'Donnell gave a very beautiful doodle, and so did Bobby Kennedy Jr. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, wow. I can't believe you missed that. I was like, whoa. I almost didn't because I was like, oh, Bobby Kennedy. Wait a minute. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Same guy, same thing. Yeah, so I thought that was pretty funny. And it's even more poignant when we get to the end of the episode, but I don't want to spoil anything yet. And here's the other thing that makes me mad on Larry's behalf is that Christine says that the fact that he put no effort in, which again, we've already settled is what he was told to do, put no effort in, just reeks of white male privilege that you can put no effort in. Like, don't get me wrong, Larry is the recipient of white male privilege, but not in this case. He did everything he was supposed to do. I would have done probably even less. I would have done like a giant stick figure or something. Larry was at least doing more than a couple of pen strokes.
Yeah, I would have done like, you know, a smiley face with like lightning bolt hair.
Yes, yeah.
That'd be my doodle.
Yeah, and but Christine says that Larry putting in no effort reeks of like being able to put in the bare minimum and still going through life because you're a white male. But Larry's the only one that followed instructions, if you ask us. What stuck out to me is that I'm guessing all of the other doodles were done by like try hard celebrities who like want people to like them. They're always going to go above and beyond because of that ego. And Larry doesn't need his ego fed by, you know, auction results or people liking what he did. In fact, you know, the more people dislike it, the more I think Larry likes it. So, yeah, all of the other pictures to me reeked of people like who would say then, like Christine said, oh, this took me 10 minutes or something like that. Whatever she said her doodle took, when in reality, we know it was a huge process involving multiple media that she's passing off. It's like, well, this took me no time at all. Like, yeah, right. Try hard. You're a try hard celebrity. Larry gets up to give his speech and he basks inappropriately in the applause. I mean, he did give a big donation and he is there giving a speech, but he's really like giving that false whatever it is back, like, no, you're the heroes. Like, we're not clapping because you're a hero. I mean, we're clapping because we appreciate you being here and what you've done, but you misinterpreted our applause as like you have solved sexual assault, you know, which, you know, people are clocking. And so he goes up to the podium and Laverne Cox goes in for a hug, which Larry recoils at in horror and to the horror of the audience. You know, Sarah,
because obviously they think they that think. Larry's recoiling because Laverne Cox is trans.
Yeah,
obviously.
Like Sarah watches these with me and she's often like, you know, because I have to like watch it in the way that I do and kind of pause it. And it's sort of like taking away from our other TV time and, you know, our precious evening time and stuff like that. And plus on top of that, she's got a very bad cold this week, but she actually laughed at this part, which I thought spoke volumes about
wow.
it.
That,
yeah, I know. But, and yeah, Larry goes, ah! Which I mean, it was hilarious.
Like, and it's an immediate like, boo.
But why wouldn't Laverne go, why didn't she stick up for him? Is it because of all the penis talk earlier? That's kind of what in my head is like, he turned her off
it.
So much. Yeah,
I think that's it. Larry turned her off so much that
she
did not stand up for him.
So I think you had to have that scene of him saying transitioner and asking about the penis and stuff that she just goes, I don't know. Gosh. What a bigot, you know, like kind of
yeah,
really
exactly.
leaning into it.
Oh.
Smash cut to Swindell, like facepalming.
He's like, this was supposed to be the solution.
You thought
this
was
it. We were done.
What a great act. I love this guy. I've loved him in all these episodes that he's been in. I guess it's just been two at this point, but he's so funny with Larry. He offers to make out with Laverne. He offers to like slow dance with her. He offers to like hold a bed in like John Lennon did with Yoko Ono. We'll be in bed and we'll just stay in bed together. Now Alice is now seeking a personal settlement that he again is writing down to give to Larry and slide across the table. It's absolutely gigantic again. And he's like, but you'll have one, we'll have one more meeting. They've agreed to one more meeting about this where we maybe could turn this around. And so, you know, Larry is, you know, determined to do that. Then Swindell offers him an apple. He's like, hey, why don't you have an apple? And as Larry picks it up, he kind of goes, huh? But Larry takes a bite of the apple and it turns out it's artificial and he chips his tooth. Just like Leon did. Swindell was kind of doing it as a prank, but he figured Larry would realize it is artificial as he picked it up, but he didn't, and he took a bite out of it too fast. Although Larry suspects that he did it on purpose, that he wanted Larry to chip his tooth.
I didn't really understand anything that was happening here. I didn't understand the whole motive. I didn't understand what Larry was doing, what Swindell was getting out of this. What? Why, if he knows that the apples are artificial, why would he say, hey, why don't you have an apple? Is that the joke? Is he trying to get Larry to actually bite into an actually fake apple this time?
I don't think he wanted him to bite into it. I think he wanted Larry to be kind of like proud of him that he took a note, just like with the shrink earlier with Bryan Cranston, where he
got artificial apples instead of real apples that were show.
Right. And because when Larry picks it up, Swindell does make a noise. He goes, huh? Or something like that. Suspecting that Larry will notice as he holds the apple in his hand that it is not real, but it is so realistic that just like Leon, Larry takes a bite of it and Swindell can't act fast enough. Now, Swindell doesn't like Larry, so there might have been, you know, that might have played a little bit into it, but I think it was a prank like, oh, why don't you have an apple? Why don't you go over there and, you know, pick up an apple? And then he was going to be like, huh? See? What do you think? So I got rid of the decorative, you know. I got rid of the real decorative and I replaced it with, but Larry takes a bite too quick for him to explain that. I think that's my reading of the scene.
Let me ask you, have you ever bit into an artificial apple?
I don't think I've ever bitten into an apple, honestly.
What?
Yeah. Not a fruit guy.
What?
You've
had an apple though, right?
Yeah, like apple pie probably. if that's what's in McDonald's apple pie.
I wouldn't count on it.
Me neither. That's why I gave the qualifier. I'm sure something has snuck in there. You know, like sausage with apple pieces in it, I think I've had. But I've never reached for a raw apple and taken a bite out of it.
This is revolutionary. I didn't know this about you. What?
Maybe our next podcast is I eat fruit I've never had and Ted eats fruit again for the first time.
I mean, that would be like, That would require me to eat a lot of fruit, and I do not.
But you've had an apple? You've picked up an apple like this?
Wow. Yes, I've had an apple. Of course I've eaten an apple like this. I was going to say, most artificial apples, at least to my knowledge, are like styrofoam. They are very easy to bite. They're not like plaster. They're not cement. I don't know why both Larry and Leon chipped teeth on these things.
I think we're supposed to be amazed by the quality of the artificial fruit that like Susie had earlier that then Larry gets. And I guess the Swindell guy goes to the same place to get his artificial fruit. It's this revolutionary new artificial fruit that looks and feels so real. Because with decorative fruit, you want the proper weight and feel, I guess.
I guess.
I think you would know if it had a little, because even an apple, even a fresh, crisp apple has a little bit of give. You know, you can like, you know, if you were strong enough, crush one in your hand. But even if you're not, if you like pressed in a little bit, that outer layer would give a little bit. But I wouldn't imagine a artificial fruit would have the need to do that or just do that. But I wouldn't know, honestly. I don't think I've had an apple slice. And I definitely haven't taken a bite out of a big old apple like this. And I certainly wouldn't grab one that's just sitting out on someone's counter. But like Larry said, if it's displayed, it probably is for, he has a lot of guests. He has a lot of clients come in. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Back at home, Leon and Larry are complaining about their chipped teeth. And I like the way they're both sitting there and both like tonguing, you know, where their tooth is chipped. Because if anything is different in your mouth, you know, you're doing that constantly. You're like, what is that? I just can't stop doing that now. It just feels so funny for something that feels the same all the time. And then they're both lisping everything. and Larry gets a call about a $1,000 charge on his credit card, which was patatas bravas and Montego cheese and paella. And he's like, oh my gosh, Francisco, who I gave my credit card, is using my credit card. And so he gets up, he's like, we have to find Francisco Tardal. Like I said, every time they did it, it cracked me up. And they go outside, and Jeff has shown up. He's lisping, too, because he bit his tongue. And so now three lisping dudes are on their way to the church. They walk into another service for Concepcion. That's the auntie's name. And, again, giving Lo Cientos all the way in. Lo Ciento. Lo Ciento. And they help themselves to the buffet because Larry's like, we paid for this. Let's go get some food. And they all like kind of trounce up there. And then they finally find Francisco, who thinks they're making fun of the way that they speak because they're all lisping when they yell at them. And so, all the guests start advancing on the trio and end up taking them outside and putting them all in garbage cans as the Three Stooges tune plays, the Three Stooges theme song, Three Blind Mice plays. And I'm glad that it wasn't just a cinematic homage, that they did give a wink to the audience. Like, because when they walked in, I was like, this is so slapstick. They're like the Three Stooges. I thought it was funny. It really worked on me.
Yeah, I thought this was really funny as well.
Because they're like, yeah, out of my way. Like, they're really doing that whole shtick and just sort of like scooping stuff onto their plates in like these big cartoony ways. And it played very big and cartoony and Three Stooges. And so I'm glad they played that. Like at the end, they're upside down in the trash cans and their feet are like wiggling back and forth, forth cartoony style. And it's like, dur, 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 burr, you know, and the screen like wipes down to a, you know, it does like a circle wipe down to the next scene. So I thought it was hilarious. Back over at Swindell's office, Larry's in the garage and he sees a trailer for the movie Lee with Ted Danson. And he runs into Alice, who's waiting for the elevator. It's awkward, of course. And she's like, I really think we should wait for our, you know, lawyers to talk. And he offers her a scone because she is a little hungry. And so she takes a scone as they get into the elevator and she starts choking. And Larry can't figure out how to deliver the Heimlich without touching her. And touching her is going to lead to more sexual harassment charges. So she collapses as the doors open up. And Frolic starts to play, and that's the end of the episode. I thought this was very dumb and cartoony too, and it's like you know how to give the Heimlich. It just involves the area below the rib cage. But I did like at one point his hands go out like he's gonna grab both her breasts in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, that's how you're gonna get her to stop choking, Larry. Absolutely, like, you gotta grab her breasts
like Janet Jackson Rolling Stone cover style. Like his hands are doing all sorts of things, and when they did that I was like, that's stupid, but it worked on me. That's very funny.
Oh god.
It was so stupid but so funny. It just sort of like matched the tone of the episode, I think. And then did you catch the first credit directed by Cheryl Hines?
No, I didn't see that. All right.
So hence the Bobby Kennedy Jr. shout out. I was like, now it makes total sense.
Well,
of course
she
would give a little wink.
Hope that was a one and done then.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. I think this is the first episode I've noticed her name. And then I did look up Christine Lottie later. And interestingly enough, because Larry mentions in talking to somebody about what a feminist he is, that he had a picture of Gloria Steinem up in his room because she was very attractive. Christine Lottie played Gloria Steinem on a PBS miniseries. Mm-hmm. And she's an Oscar winner. She won the 1996 Oscar for Best Live Short.
Okay. Wow.
And before that, in 1985, she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for a movie called Swing Shift. So you talk about forgotten Academy Award nominated movies. Swing Shift. Now we can watch that if we ever want to.
Yeah.
She got a nod for it. I don't know who won that year, but there we go. There's a little background on Christine Lottie.
All right. Well, Tim, what do you like for cover art this week?
Man, there was something. I think, did I like when they were advancing on the three guys and you see their oral injuries? And I thought that was pretty funny. So, yeah, because we get that POV shot once again, as we sometimes do, of someone advancing on Larry David. But in this case, Leon and Jeff are with him. What else? What do you think?
I really like the three shot, like as they're being backed up by everyone.
What I was thinking.
Maybe something with that. I'll see what I can do.
Or maybe Larry and Leon sitting in their chairs, tonguing their openings.
Ew. Oh, God. That sounds dirty as hell.
Yeah.
Ew.
That might be a good one, too. We'll have to put NSFW on the...
we'll put the NSFW in the alt text for the cover art.
Yeah. Larry David and Leon Black tongue their openings.
Jesus Christ. Okay, let's see what we can do about this week's description.
All right.
So we had Larry gets the chance to clear the air with Alice and goes to extreme lengths for a lunch with Richard.
I don't like for a lunch with Richard. There's just got to be another preposition we can put there.
There's got to be another pronoun we can use.
Hey.
That's a little Easter egg for our season 12 shorty.
Larry goes to extreme lengths, but it's not at the lunch. It's what about before? What about just before? Before a lunch with Richard Lewis.
Yeah, why not?
Larry goes to extreme lengths.
Before a lunch with Richard.
Before a lunch with Richard Lewis. I mean, it almost still doesn't do the work because it's like Larry goes to extreme lengths so that Richard doesn't pay for lunch. Richard goes to extreme lengths to buy lunch for Richard Lewis. Doesn't add too much. What do we think? How are we feeling?
And goes to extreme lengths to keep Richard Lewis from buying lunch.
I don't hate that either.
Okay. I'm just trying to think like of a way that we can make it a continuation of the first sentence and not have Larry pop up as the subject twice, which is very common in season 10.
And goes to extreme lengths. What about, and goes to extreme lengths to treat Richard Lewis to lunch?
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Right. I like that. I like that. That settles it because that puts the payment on Larry instead of just keeps Richard from paying. Yes.
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right.
But that's just, you know, what we can come up with our human brains. Let's turn it over to the robots with Curb Your Enthusiasm. What do we got?
So here's the prompt. Write a speech to deliver. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. please write a synopsis of episode 3 of season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is, Oh, God, I can't wait to see artificial fruit. Can't wait to see what it comes up with when I give it a device like artificial fruit. Larry David finds himself entangled in a series of comedic mishaps surrounding artificial fruit. So far, so good, actually.
Okay.
The episode centers around Larry's attempt to impress his new girlfriend, Lucy, by cooking a gourmet meal for her. Sure, just invent a new character. Just invent a new character. Just do
it.
Yeah. It's fine.
What was the name it gave you?
Lucy.
Okay.
However, his plans are thwarted when he discovers that the fresh fruit he purchased is actually artificial. All right, that takes mistaking fresh fruit and artificial fruit to whole new lengths, to the extreme of like going to a different store. Like you'd have to go to a different store to do that. Larry goes to Home Goods to buy groceries. Determined to salvage the meal, Larry embarks on a quest to procure real fruit. I knew when it had a device like artificial fruit, it would just write the whole thing around it in a completely wrong way, leading to a series of hilarious encounters with grocery store employees, street vendors, and even a fruit cart thief. What? A fruit
That's
cart
it.
Thief?
A fruit Along cart the way, thief.
Along the way, Larry's penchant for social faux pas. He doesn't have a penchant for social faux pas. It just happens to him. And his knack for getting in. That's like I have a penchant for red lights. It's like, no, they just happen in my everyday life.
Stopped at all of them.
Yeah.
I have a penchant for getting run off the road by dudes in F-250s. No, it just happens in Texas because no one fucking looks before they merge.
That's just life in Texas, and trucks
That's just
are
life
10
in
times
Texas.
Higher than they should be. His knack for getting into awkward situations are on full display, culminating in a memorable dinner date with Lucy that doesn't go quite as planned. As always, the episode is filled with witty banter, sharp observations, and laugh-out-loud moments that are quintessentially Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, that Lucy. You know.
Wow.
She's a character. She's a real character, that's for sure.
Definitely a character in this show that we know and love.
Okay, Tim, did you like this episode, lastly?
Ted, I think I loved this episode.
Really?
I have to give it a full star. I don't know why it's like one of my most favorite episodes that I've watched in recent memory.
Wow.
I can't tell you why I had such a good time watching it. But, you know, I think in one case it is that Larry is right. I like when Larry is right, and yet the world doesn't recognize it, which he was in a lot of cases. Not every case, but a lot of cases here. Like, I think Susie should take down the picture. I think he made a perfect scone. We know that he was right. Maybe not, you know, he didn't have the right reaction, but with his interaction with Laverne Cox on stage, he could have tampered that reaction a little bit, but, you know, he did what he did by reaction, and he was right about the doodle. And so I kind of am drawn to episodes like that, and I got, you know, some good laughs out of it. I don't know. It's a full star. I mean, it might even be a top 10 episode for me.
Wow. A top 10 of the run of the show?
I'm going to remember it. Yeah, I'm going to remember it as one of my favorites. Yeah, I know.
Wow, that is some high praise.
I loved the lisping. I loved the Three Stooges homage. Yeah, just great. What about you? Not to the same degree, I'm guessing.
Not really to the same degree. I mean, I think this, I think it did also suffer from I need to watch an hour and a half of Curb Your Enthusiasm content in 45 minutes. And I was already like, as soon as I sit down on the couch, I'm going to check my phone and not leave my phone mentally. So it did suffer from that. It needed to be great to pull me in and get me invested, and it just did not. I am, however, gonna give it a star low because from the Three Stooges, like, the Three Stooges homage and the lisping, it did pull me in, and I'm like, okay, this is good. This is very well done.
Yeah, I every time someone lisped at Larry, he was like, what was that? And they said it just as fast, if not faster, lisping all the way through. I just thought that was funny. And then when all the guys are lisping as well.
Like lisping at the end?
Yeah, yeah. and just to each other, you know, it was funny. Get in. We're going to find Francisco Verdad.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, next week we have got Season 10, Episode 4. You're not going to get me to say anything bad about Mickey. Very long title.
The disco. Oh, no, wait. Yeah. Does it have an exclamation point?
It does not.
Oh,
no exclamation point. Original air date, February 9th, 2020, I believe. I did not look that up.
That sounds
right.
7 days.
Adding 7 days to this episode. And if you are looking at TV Guide that night, you are going to see Larry brings an impromptu date to a destination wedding and finds himself in a sticky situation when he goes searching for a toothbrush.
Interesting. Okay. I kind of like the sound of it. It looks like we're kind of on location. You know, this is like a destination wedding. So from the previews, it looks like they're going somewhere. And whether that's just going to be Southern California shot to look like Spain or Mexico, wherever they are, we'll find out. Sounds good. Oh, and it was funny that like the title is so long, as you might notice, that it is cut off on the title screen on like if you select this episode and you see the big, it says you're not going to get me to say anything bad about. And that's it.
I had to go to IMDb to find the full name.
Yeah, it's so long. HBO cuts it off. All right. That sounds good. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that is it.
All right. For No Hugging, No Learning, I'm Tim Murphy.
I'm Ted Hallowell. Be good.